Blog Talk Radio.
Now. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Nick, is it rude to eat popcorn during a podcast?
No, but I think, you know, if you're looking for anything more exciting than the news today to fill tonight's evening's conversation, SmackDown was not it. So by all means, break out a turkey if you need to.
The way Sammy celebrated afterwards with that bucket of popcorn was something else. You know, they were getting a kick out of that.
Sure.
The Usos, not shockingly, retain the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships against Drew McIntyre and Sheamus, a very formidable tag team, but not much doubt going into this match that this was going to be the night that the Usos lost the belts. Does that bother you? Should they have tried a little harder, done a little more to make that feel like the belts are really at risk? Or am I overstating how much of the general SmackDown audience was watching that going, you know, we're not here to see a title change?
No, you're not overstating it. You know, this didn't feel like the first SmackDown of a new year. This didn't feel like a special reset, and most especially didn't feel special at the main event level. So I think we did have some newsworthy items that, you know, the actual last segment tied into, but overall there wasn't this threat on the Usos. There was a brief moment where I thought, oh, well, they wouldn't end it this way. But that's hardly in contrast to the feeling of, wow, this is it. They're going to pull the trigger. There's a definite difference in those two approaches. This felt like a serviceable end to a show rather than a meaningful match. And I think overall it was kind of the tone for the night.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I'm fine with putting a tag team match on where you're pretty sure what the ending's going to be. You just want to see how it happens. You want to see a good match and see if, you know, there's a question if Sammy's at ringside, will he screw up and the Usos will overcome his screw up or will that do anything? But the story of this show was the bloodline and Roman Reigns actually apologizing to Sami Zayn for losing his temper earlier in the show when giving Sammy a hard time about acting like he was the tribal chief and calling shots. The setup, as they were on their way to the ring, was Cole saying that, you know, Reigns might be in a bad mood because he hasn't lost in over 3 years, other than by DQ. Last week was a loss. So the interaction with and of course, Heyman's a supporting actor in this, hanging in the background. It's fun to watch his reactions. The Usos and Solo played their part. But this was about Reigns and Sammy and just the magic chemistry that they have on the screen. I enjoyed the heck out of it. I think it's the main reason to recommend somebody who DVR'd this show to watch it. And, you know, there's some good wrestling, including in the main event. But the interaction with Roman and Sammy, as always, was good. And I thought this was on the higher end of it.
Yeah, no, I thought it was brilliant. It was top tier. And there was advancement to it. You know, some weeks we go by with SmackDown, and there's like a little tinge of advancement that you're almost like, okay, so it's like a page of the book changed. This felt a little bit more than that. This definitely felt substantive in that moment with the apology. It is up there with those other hallmark moments of the Bloodline storyline where you know you're going to remember this moment when. And it almost feels like, you know, I have to tell you, today this was the first time where I thought, okay, you know, I've been on the opposite side of most who expect Sammy to be, you know, whacked by the mob in this storyline. And I said, no, I don't think it's going to be Sammy. This was the first time where I felt the emotional pull that others have been feeling where, oh, my God, they're going to take out our Sammy. You know, they're definitely getting that emotional connection in. And, you know, Wade, you joked about the popcorn moment and everything. And, you know, those moments are important to continue to express the innocence that the Sami Zayn character is supposed to give off. And, you know, it is comical. It is laughable. It's all those things. But it's also meant to pull at your heartstrings in a weird way. And I do think Sammy's acting can't go understated in this whole thing because, you know, Roman is exceptional. Paul is even more than exceptional. The Usos, everyone's doing more than carrying their weight now. And I'm really glad that they veered away from that trying to break stuff. And that was really getting to be distracting. But Sami Zayn really, as the backbone of this whole thing, the emotional part of this whole thing, it's working, and it's working in a big way, thanks in part to him. You know, this stuff with Kevin Owens could feel repetitive. There's a moment where you kind of feel like, has it already been 2 years since we were at a Royal Rumble with Roman versus Owens? And that is there. There's definitely a repetition there. But the good news is that the Sami Zayn of it all makes it 10 times more interesting.
So update all of us on your expectations timeline-wise and how it happens. Do you have any more of an idea based not only on the interaction with Reigns and Sami? And I did not see Reigns' apology coming where he's like, I shouldn't have lost my temper like that. Let me apologize to you. And I always feel like they're messing with Sami, that there's nothing sincere about Heyman and Reigns. But then sometimes I doubt that. And I think, well, maybe they are sincere. Maybe they're actually internally feel an affinity towards them. There's a certain affection towards Sami, wanting to be with them. And so part of it is messing with him, but maybe a large part of it is just trying to manage the situation and their egos and trying to make it work. You add the element now of Sami one-on-one with Kevin Owens, because in the end, and this is what they do to Sami, they make him feel good, and then there's a thing at the end that puts him back on edge. Sami can never spend the week or the weekend feeling as good as he felt for 8 seconds before they drop on him something that puts him back on edge. And that something is, you better win next week. And then you got Cole underlining it at the end of the show going, Sammy's got maybe the most important match of his career. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, this is meant to show Sammy's anxiety constantly. Wait, I think it's so interesting that you and I are on the complete opposite ends of interpretation of this thing, which really I think is really a compliment to how well-written this whole Bloodline piece is. Because for me, as I've been watching this all along, I felt like it was always more genuine affection towards Sami. And the actual seeds of doubt was that Roman was really not showing that he was doubting his own cousins in this whole thing, or namely Jey Uso. This, again, you know, while you've been kind of looking at it in the reverse lens, I like the shades of gray in this whole thing. And, you know, the hope is that this is all leading to something very, very meaningful coming up into WrestleMania season. And how quickly they're going to pull the trigger on any of this thing is really, you know, still to be seen. I think it's safe to say in the long run of the Bloodline storyline, you see Sami Zayn break away. You see Jey Uso break away. Maybe Solo Sikoa break away at some point. It's who goes first. And I think that is the big question mark. And I think that's the really most exciting actual question heading into WrestleMania season. There's a lot to consider around February and Montreal and the big show at the Elimination Chamber taking place there. And I think by that point, something major is going to take place with Sami Zayn in terms of either he's going to be fully established as the member of the group that Roman has affection towards, or he will be the defector. And I think that, you know, I don't think it's crystal clear on either way. We might all have our personal hopes and wishes for this thing, but at the end of the day, I think the fact that we're all still confused and have, you know, just hopes, that's a really good thing.
If you had to just have a flash answer to the question, should Sami stay with the Bloodline beyond WrestleMania, or should they absolutely play this thing out and have a climax at WrestleMania? Which do you side with?
So I side with Sami Zayn being a part of the Bloodline and Jey Uso being the one that they kick out.
Yeah.
That's where I've been consistent with that, but I think that's the story. And wait, I've said this over and over again, and I'm sure the listeners hate me saying it. You cannot have a moment like Jey Uso saying, man, I don't give a damn what the tribal chief says, and not actually do something with it. You can't do that. And so, you know, I'm just saying that's still out there. It really is.
And they put it out there, but they're not talking a lot about it. And that makes it seem like it's less of a red herring and more of something, a card to play later.
Yeah.
Yeah, which backs up your point, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, Wade, on Twitter, you see that clip popping up almost every few days. Like, don't forget this is out there. You know, it hasn't been struck from history, and I think that means it's going to come into play down the line.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce the show and ourselves, and then we'll get on to phone calls and emails and more discussion about tonight's episode. we'll also see if the United States of America is the Speaker of the House while we're on the air. We already have, and we'll talk about this too, Nick. The return of Vince McMahon to power. He inserted himself back into management. We have a leaked transcript of Stephanie McMahon and other executives talking to all employees today about the incident. WrestleNomics has that out, available for their members. Check them out. They do great work over at WrestleNomics. Brandon Thurston was on our YouTube channel earlier today, too, with Tyler Sage. I was on the PW Torch YouTube channel with Tyler Sage earlier talking about the Vince McMahon news, too. So if you have not yet subscribed to the PW Torch YouTube channel, this is the day to do it. This is the weekend to do it and catch up on our content. I talked about Vince McMahon with Tyler for about 25 minutes. And then Zach and Tyler did their show on it. A lot of Vince McMahon talk over at our YouTube channel. But first things first, we're here to talk SmackDown. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, January 6th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder of Pro Wrestling Torch and PWTorch.com, and the host of many podcasts, many of them free like this one. And they go ad-free and plug-free for our members on our VIP feed. So if that appeals to you, check out details. You got a lot of other bonuses with VIP membership, including in the last 24 hours or so, two Wade Keller hotlines around 25 minutes each dedicated to insider insight and analysis from covering this business for over 30 years trying to put in perspective what this story means with Vince McMahon's return to a high position of management and what it doesn't mean also and what is just not known, no matter what anyone says at this point. Because it can't be known yet because there's so many moving parts. So I covered that in two-way Keller hotlines. That's available for VIP members. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip for full details and signing up with credit card, debit card, PayPal, Patreon, or you can even just click a button on your phone through your Apple iPhone podcast app and subscribe using your Apple account to get all our VIP shows. Again, full details, pwtorch.com/govip. We will keep you busy this weekend with our coverage. The other voice you hear so far on today's show is Nick Barbati. He is the co-star. Can I call you that, or do you want to be the star of
featured,
Nick and Tom's
featured what, star, what? Wayne?
The featured star of Tom and Nick's Intercontinental Adventure. Did I get that right?
No. Always the first build.
Yeah. I figured. Yeah, I knew that. Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. It is available tomorrow on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed for everyone. VIP members usually get an earlier access to it with the ad-free format on the PW Torch VIP feed. So many perks when you're a VIP member. Support us. Go VIP. Nick, welcome back to the co-host chair. What a fun week to have you on.
Oh, wait. I'm honestly so excited to be here. You know, when you asked me to be on this week, this was before all this news broke. But I feel like I'm always here when, like, something crazy is going on. So I'm, like, really, really
excited.
CM Punk
just returned on Rampage. CM Punk just returned on Rampage.
Please don't make me relive that, please. That is one that I'm glad that will live on forever as you're screaming in his enthusiasm and I'm just dying off on the vine on the quarter. But, you know, Wade, I got to tell you this, and I take this as a total compliment. You have been doing such great work the past couple of days, and I thought the show that on YouTube that was happening with you and Tyler earlier was just phenomenal. I was riveted by, you know, every element of this. And this is a really riveting weekend in wrestling. I mean, this is Tom and I actually rush recorded our show today, which will be released tomorrow, because it was just, there was so much news happening that it was like, we got to get on this because we wanted to talk to each other. And that's what Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure is. It's really two friends who actually never met each other in real life, but are, you know, really excited to talk about wrestling. And this is an uber interesting time to be a wrestling fan. And, you know, I'm so curious, Wade, to further delve into what you and the listeners, if the conversation goes there, you know, think about all the news items for this weekend. But I have to tell you, you know, to give you the preview, Tom and I are not optimistic about this news. I think that this is there's a rightful cause for concern that exists that you're seeing on social media, especially yesterday when the news kind of first started breaking. There was kind of this real ripple effect of like, oh my God, the sky is falling. And then by the morning, it kind of settled into, but he's not going to touch creative. Do not believe that. He will touch creative, people. I am your anxiety. Yep. I am the anxiety pulse of PW Torch coming through to say you have reason to be concerned. And we get into that in a big way tomorrow.
Yeah, I talked at length about that in the Keller Hotline, you know, the possibility of Vince being on headset at WrestleMania. And I know there's people who think that will be the case. I also know WWE is trying to quell those fears. Stephanie McMahon in her meeting with employees. There's a great misspeak by her where she said, I know a lot of you are feeling anxiety over this. And she meant to say just angst. And it might seem like that's a small difference. Yeah. And, you know, she corrected herself. And I said anxiety. This is a quote. Again, you can read the whole thing at WrestleNomics. We don't want there to be. Obviously, there's going to be some animosity. Mm. Not animosity, angst. Natural emotions that you might feel. Animosity. That's a Freudian slip in my mind.
That's
the
big one.
Yeah, so there's a difference between being nervous and being angry. And she slipped up and said, a lot of you are angry about this in so many words, or, you know, a variation of the word. And that is how fans feel. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's angst, but I think there's a sense of animosity towards, you know, there was a feeling that it was turning the page to a new era, and now he's back. And they can say he's just here to facilitate the best deal possible for a new deal. Stephanie really stressed in that meeting with employees, or actually it might have been Frank Riddick, stressed for the employees, it's the timing. The timing makes sense because we don't want to negotiate a TV deal with, say, Fox and then entertain an offer from Disney. We need to figure out if we have a suitor who we can strike a deal with before we negotiate a TV deal. And minimal lip service was paid, but not enough to make Vince McMahon have a case that they're undercutting him. Is he's a guy who is a founder and he can help us get that best deal. And that's the framing of it. But you sound skeptical, Nick. You sound like this is Vince trying to get back into a position he really misses.
Well, this is about Vince McMahon, period. So let me tell you something, Wade. This is a man that, as you'll recall back on the Beyond the Mat documentary film that came out, who said, we are in the business of making movies. This is a man who views his life as a movie, and he worked 40 years in his mind for a grand finale that he did not get.
Yeah.
And this is his grand finale. So when people ask, what is this about? This is his goodbye. This is his final chapter. That last WrestleMania that he had with Steve Austin, that wasn't enough, despite it being quite honestly fitting. That was enough. Mm-hmm. Certainly the summer trip to start off SmackDown and I think Raw, when he came out and just greeted fans and left as a, you know, major FU to everybody, that wasn't the way he wanted to go out. This is his chance to have the big rah-rah moment where either, you know, he, you know, sells the company or something major, some major celebration comes, and he feels like he's going to be thrown on everyone's shoulder and carried forward until a pause screen and then the book closes. So it's a level of delusion, sure, but that's what he is seeking right now. This is about not about the company. This is about nobody else.
Yep.
This is about Vince McMahon not being insulted on his way out. You know, the worst thing that could have happened for Vince when he left was there to be an air of success in the days past him. And that is exactly what he was greeted with. So this is the resentment coming forth in a big wave. That's exactly what's happening right now.
And Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan and Paul Levesque did not give Vince something that he might have been sitting around waiting for, which is that compelling reason to come back to save the company. They've been steering the company in a good direction. The sentiment is the ship is steady and it's moving in a better direction than it was before. Nothing too shockingly different to alarm shareholders. But, you know, it's like if you weren't following the news, you wouldn't think, oh, my God, something's different. And to some fans, that's bad. But to shareholders, that's good because you're on the verge of a sale that's going to, you know, in theory, shoot WWE stock up over $100. And that is a holy grail moment for a lot of people in that company that they've been waiting for. You know, and the stock jumped up today and then it settled down a little bit, as often happens. But, yeah, I mean, I've said this to a few people who are, you know, involved in this story in various ways in WWE and the McMahon family that are not for Vince coming back. But I've said it is understandable human nature for Vince to want to come back, and he has the power to do so. And it shouldn't be shocking It's what you said, and it's what I've been saying. He's got a no-hitter – he had a no-hitter going in his mind, and he had one more batter to get out. And then the scandal hit, and he resigned. And he feels like he shouldn't have stepped off that pitcher's mound. He should have stayed there to finish, and he's regretting it. And he wants to write the final chapter of his story. But where the animosity comes in, I heard this last month from people in WWE, the animosity is he's making it about him when things are going well and they don't need him. And the risk factor of him coming back is much greater than the risk factor of him not coming back. He might push for a slightly better deal than others will negotiate. Maybe. Because it's his thing, and he can stare across the table at executives, and he'll be willing to blink and play hardball more than the others. And that might be Vince's argument to himself. But the risk of him coming back with all the allegations against him and perhaps more skeletons in the closet, it's so much greater, and that's why people are pissed off. And that's why, perhaps, Stephanie McMahon's Freudian slip of animosity instead of angst.
Yeah, well, you know, Wade, here's the thing. When you're talking about him sitting across the negotiation table, you cannot convince me that his reputation has not been tarnished in a big way. And quite honestly, the allegations and the investigation that did come through last summer, to not have that actually be a hindrance on TV deals, it would be shocking to me. You reference what I think everyone is kind of dreading but tiptoeing around because you don't want to say something that is – you know, defamatory is, yes, there is always potential for more coming out. And that's scary. I think you also are tiptoeing around, and Tom and I delve into this tomorrow, the possibility of some of these mainstream stars who've been, you know, hinted at or flirted with to come back for WrestleMania season really not wanting to be associated with this if they really put their thinking caps on of, are you sure you want to touch this after everything that just came out and could potentially come out. You know, this really reputationally is not good for the WWE, no matter how you cut it. I don't think there's any way you read this and say, oh, wow, this is good news that Vince is back. And that's the shame of it all. Because one thing, Wade, I think you and I have talked about, or maybe not, is despite everything that came out this summer, there was a certain level of grace that was given to Vince McMahon on his way out. He was not trying to be, quote, canceled. He was not someone that, you know, the lynch mob came out and was trying to find everything from his history. Wrestling fans, and honestly, I think even the Wall Street Journal, all things considered, were trying to, like, lead this man into his room and close the door. And, you know, now you're, like, fighting back about something. And it's, like, one of those things of, you know, don't push this too hard, Vince, because if you really want people to do this, they'll do it. And it really, you know, this could lead things not just really damaging further to his reputation, which I don't really think people have an expectation to suddenly that, you know, improve in any big way, but it could be really damaging more to the culture of WWE. And once you get into that, that's when you have TV deals suddenly becoming less desirable. That's when you have executives not wanting to touch this. That's when you have more board of directors willingly stepping down, as we know two did today. You know, that is the big story that is, like, because we don't know much about those individuals, it's easy to bypass that. But the fact that two people who were on the investigative team of Vince McMahon have decided, nope, for whatever reason, that they made the decision, today is the day I am leaving WWE, there's a big story there.
And I've said this on the Keller Hotlines for VIP members last today and yesterday. This is a story I am told that is going to be a hot topic for the next, you know, for today and the next few days and into next week. It isn't going to end that. I don't know how far to go with this, but I don't want to use the word things being plotted, but I think things being prepared if needed that will be played 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 weeks from now. This is not more, you know, this isn't something that's going to last 6 or 8 months, but this is a story where I think everyone should buckle up for the next month or two. This is a high stakes game with some really intense feelings behind the scenes that can't go public. And frankly, that's been the case since Vince stepped down because Vince was a majority shareholder. He could do this anytime. And it was known, you know, he ultimately had the power. They have caveats in their public statements, you know, that ultimately Vince can, in so many words, they can't use this language. Vince McMahon is a majority shareholder. He could screw it up for all of us. It basically says that in the fine print to investors in their long, long, no paragraph break disclosures of things to be concerned about. They basically said he could screw this up for all of us. keep that in mind. And that's what some people see this as. So there are, there's some cards to be played. It's going to be fascinating. And you're right, he could get back creatively. I think there's some people who are going to think, if he wants to sit at the negotiating table and we give him that and he behaves himself and Michelle Wilson and George Barrios are the ones doing most of the talking and we all get our money, okay, we can be nervous and we'll white-knuckle our way through that. But if he starts wanting to put on the headset and he wants, with all the allegations against him, to start deciding which women get pushed, which women get hired, what gets said about women on the air, like, should he be somebody in that role ever again based on the allegations and the payouts? What does WWE say to that? How could they even possibly think of letting him not just control wrestling creative, but in particular control and have be a deciding factor over which women get pushed? What goes into that decision-making? How are people supposed to feel about that?
Well, wait, I got to tell you this. I think if I were to ask you to make a prediction on what this looks like by WrestleMania, A, is he even still there by WrestleMania is a question I would ask you. And B, you know, at this point, do you think it'll come to a major source of conflict backstage in a way that, you know, breaks big in a news capacity? I think the potential is there that, A, he is not even there by WrestleMania. Yep. I don't know that this is sustainable. I don't think you can hold your breath and hope for the best for a negotiation. Because at that point, and please excuse me being cavalier about this, you have like a grumpy old man that you're working around when really you have an entire team of professionals that are much more, you know, in a headspace to actually handle these negotiations. Why do you need this? And at some point, you know, if you are Paul Levesque, if you are Nick Khan, if you're Stephanie McMahon, you know, yes, Vince could, quote, ruin it for everybody else. But the power is in the youth of it all and is in where the momentum is right now. And I think if they are able to formulate the right alliance, you know, this is so ironic, you know, with what was written on WWE 20 years ago, you know, maybe there is a way of kind of, once again, pushing him out the door and sealing it shut this time. And enough of the skeletons would have to come pouring out, I must admit, and I don't know, and I'm not willing for that to happen. But, you know, this is something that when you talk about, like, this is going to sound so crazy, but, you know, you and I, one of our first conversations we ever had was about Raw Underground. It was the very first call-in show I did with you, and Raw Underground. Do you remember that during the COVID thing where – you know, and I said one of the first lines, things we ever talked about, I go, it's one of those things of like you close your eyes and you think about it and you think, in 2 months this won't exist because you just literally can't see it meaning anything in the future. I can't close my eyes and see Vince McMahon being there in 3 months. I just can't do it. It doesn't make sense to me that the resentment of the fan base, the resentment that could be building between the wrestlers, like all the goodwill that has been created backstage about, you know, I think back to Eric Bischoff on his podcast talking about the sheer chaos at his most recent WWE run, about how the shows were written, how they were produced, how maddening it was for the entire writers and creative team and everything. You know, I assume things have improved. Maybe not totally because there's chaos, but, you know, nobody wants to go back to that. Nobody is going to be willing to say, you know what, I'm willing to go back to the sheer insanity. Once you get a taste of normalcy, you don't want to go back to that. And I think the entire team around him will be entirely unwilling to welcome him back.
I am not confident in any prediction. I think there's a wide range. I think he could be on headset at WrestleMania, and I think he could be canceled by WrestleMania. And I think there's a broad range in between of different possibilities too. I do not know. And that's what's fascinating about this. And frankly, people who know more than I do also don't know. There's I wouldn't call it a game of chicken being played, but there are moves being made with a lot of information being left off. There's not just free-flowing communication at this point. There's people being blindsided, you know, by things that are happening. So, yeah, it's amazing. But you're right. It's not just normalcy. It's the absence of sanity. Or, I'm sorry, the absence of insanity that has become normal. It doesn't mean that TVs can't be stressful and there might not be rewrites or, you know, decisions people don't like. But it's an absence of arbitrary insanity, just that sense of always being on edge. And that's not there now. And
yeah.
I don't think people want to go back to it. But the people who don't want to go back to that don't really have a say-so over it. I mean, there's not like the writers can't go on strike and cause Vince McMahon to go, okay, point made, I'll back off. Like, the people who are going to be affected by this, the wrestlers and the writers and the producers, they just don't have a say in this. So, yeah, it's crazy. Anything else you want to say on Vince? Next.
No, I think it'll probably continue on throughout the rest of the show, but it's, you know, really, really fascinating. In many ways, scary time. You know, I don't enjoy this news one bit, Wade. I really, really don't.
Yeah. Yep. Do you, from a social media standpoint, is it what's the sentiment percentage-wise anti-Vince, and how intense is it?
100%. I think it's 100% anti-Vince. I think it's – I think the sheer concern and, oh, my God, really was at a fever pitch yesterday. I think today it's everyone just trying to convince themselves like there's no real reason. You know, this was a high these past 6 months of being a wrestling fan. Wade, you know, it's been a long time for WWE fans to actually have permission to be relaxed and enjoy the product and actually be excited about it. And it wasn't just Vince. It's what it represented. This felt like a real movement for young wrestlers, different size wrestlers, women's wrestlers. This felt like the future had come to fruition and things that we'd all been begging for. Those little things that, you know, having a storyline that quite frankly just makes sense week in, week out, watching a segment and knowing in 3 weeks it'll matter rather than I'm expected to forget it immediately. You know, those things had kind of eased into wrestling fans, and it was reflected in attendance to major shows. It was it reflected in ratings. I mean, all the good metrics of success. And you could almost just feel it being taken from you. And I think that's what the feeling is. Like, we have fallen in love with this product, and rightfully so. And by the way, let me say, I understand a lot of what we are falling in love with was initiated by Vince. You look at the bloodline, you look at, you know, the Roman Reigns character, which is the greatest character in wrestling in, you know, the past 10 years. So sure, okay, Vince has started to create that. But the world that has grown around him, the factions and everything that would have never taken place under Vince's watch, you know, having that be so, like, feel like it could be, like, slipping from our fingers, it's unacceptable.
Yeah.
It really is. And quite frankly, we as fans deserve better than this.
Yeah. All right. Very good. We will pivot towards our callers and emails. If you want to talk Vince McMahon, you can. If you want to stick to our normal format of SmackDown, of course, that works too. Our number, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That plays you on our switchboard. So we know you want to be on the show. 347-215-8558. Check out pwtorch.com for results, not only my report on SmackDown tonight, but also our coverage of AEW Rampage and back-to-back AEW Battle of the Belts. We'll have full results up at pwtorch.com tonight on that. Also, check out Alex McDonald's report on SmackDown for his alt perspective, detailed report on the show. Just about always, we have two points of view on SmackDown on Friday nights and then more analysis as the weekend progresses.
Yeah, he does
okay,
a great
so,
job.
Okay, so first up,
you know that way? Yeah, he does a great job. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I think I've got him on the calendar for his return to co-hosting next week. Let me look here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's scheduled to co-host next week. So he'll be back after being off for November and December with some scheduling issues. All right, cool. So our first caller of the show, Chris from Warner Robins, Georgia. Chris, thank you for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Okay. Hey, guys. Finally, I get to be on with Nick, so that's a cool treat. Well, the first thing on my mind is Vince. so let's get that out of the way. The thing about it is that how gun-shy does this make, like, negotiations for, like, your main event at WrestleMania? Because how does Dwayne Johnson feel about he's having a tough, like, months so far. And he's tried to, like, reestablish his brand and, like, his bread and butter wrestling. You know, he can come back to it. But you have this guy coming back with all these allegations. Does he even want to do it, like, if they asked him? Like, you know, Hunter, like, asked, like, you want to come back? He's like, yeah, but, like, I want to be with him now?
No. that's what's fascinating about this is you know, we focus on the potential of more allegations, that there's more out there that can be damaging about Vince McMahon's personal conduct. What's also interesting is what celebrities, what big name wrestlers who have a lot to lose by associating with somebody who, and I, by the way, I credit the Associated Press, unlike just about every other media, mainstream corporate media entity out there, the headline was about Vince McMahon is back. AP, the AP headline writer said WWE's Vince McMahon is back after misconduct investigation. That was in the headline. You know, Reuters just said WWE confirms former chief has returned to the board. That was kind of the more typical headline. Variety, Vince McMahon removes three board members as return to the company takes shape. It's like, just, you know, just this is one of those little things. The AP included in the headline one of the big keys here. And if more media entities point that out, if it seems fans care, if advertisers care, if potential negotiating partners care, that all matters. It also matters if Dwayne The Rock Johnson and John Cena care. We know where Brock Lesnar stands. But this could change WrestleMania plans. This, for all we know, Roman Reigns is pissed because he had something planned with The Rock, and Rock's like, I can't associate it with this company with this guy in charge. You know, Austin Theory might be like, oh, crap. I was going to have this big thing with John Cena. John can't associate with a company being, you know, with Vince McMahon at the helm. We don't know that to be true, but it is absolutely not outside the realm of not only possibility, but likelihood that it is concerning to at least those two who have public images to uphold. Nick, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Tom and I delve deep into this in tomorrow's show, and I'm just going to go all in with what I said. Yeah. Rock should not touch this. Rock should not touch this by a big margin. You know, there's a difference in the level of celebrity that WWE has been engaging for these major shows. And some, sure, it kind of fits their overall vibe that it's not that damaging for them to be out there. You think of, like, you know, a social media influencer like Logan Paul. Is it really that far of a damage for him to be associated with Vince McMahon? Like, no, probably not. But when you get higher up the chain, you look at like a Bad Bunny, right, who is very easily seen as a fan who is just living out his moment and, oh, isn't that nice, and, oh, he's more impressive than you would have thought he was. But then when you reach The Rock then, by being involved, is a major star endorsing not only the company but the behavior of the man at the top. And that's where his brand can be deeply damaged, especially given that a large portion of his fan base is women. It is – the whole thing just seems like something, if I were a major star, you know, you're already taking a physical risk by being involved. You don't really need to be taking a reputational risk at this point. And so I think that you have to think that that's in major consideration for any star that would be out there. There would be, yes, maybe before all this, the existence of Vince McMahon would be beneficial to get someone like The Rock back. But taking all of these things into account, why would his agent, why would his manager encourage him to be there? And why he, as a smart man, would even want to be attached to this, and knowing his TV deals that he has for his shows and for his movies and whatnot could all be at risk? Doesn't make sense for him to touch it. You know, Rock has hit two big of a level where elegance, quite honestly, is expected of the partnerships that they have. And there ain't nothing elegant about this. John Cena, I think he could probably get away with it much more than The Rock could.
Chris, back to you for follow-up.
Like, for this, I really feel like there's some nuclear options about to be, like, pushed out there. Because I can feel, like, you feel the trepidation. Like, you can feel everybody, like, kind of, like, holding their breath, like, what's going to happen? But I really do feel like some stuff's going to come to the surface to keep him in check. And, like, listen, pal, this is your spot. You stay here for this and this only. And he could be canceled before this. I really do believe he could be. Because, like, it's just, like, the only person who really liked his stuff was, like, Shane's son on Instagram.
Right. But, you know, Chris, let me ask you this. From everything that we know and have seen about Vince McMahon, and I'm not talking about the character, talking about, you know, all the documentaries that we've seen, the behind-the-scenes films that he's been a part of, thinking of Wrestling with Shadows and Beyond the Mat and whatnot, You think this is a man that's going to listen to someone younger than him, someone that he brought up, someone who he introduced to the business, telling him what he can and cannot do? That's when this theory of Vince being on the outside, on the outskirts, kind of begins to fall apart for me. Because knowing the resentment that he would then push forward, you know, telling him no and telling him what to do is going to cause the exact opposite effect of that. And I think that's when you see conflict. You know, you want to talk about, is he going to be there for WrestleMania this year? I want to see who's at his Christmas table next year, because there is no way that this family leaves this year without major turmoil and real challenges to the dynamic. And that's what happens when you have a family business on such a national scale as this. And, you know, you talk about Shane's son liking things. I mean, this is toxic. All of this is toxic all the way around. This is like a scene out of Housewives, which, Wade, as you know, I love. But this is just, you know, everything about this. I don't think that there's, Wade, when you ask me what the percentage of feeling is, try to find me a single person that says the WWE team is going to get out of this working for better off for working together through it. There's no way. They're all holding their breath, to your point.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, what else for us?
Let's see. What we got is the if we go to the bloodline thing. Like, it's really just a masterclass every week of like just sociopathic Roman just like leading this guy on, and you're kind of like, is he gonna do this to this man or is he not? Because you know he blames it one moment, but then there's like the popcorn thing. Like, you know, you hand him a bag like a bowl of popcorn, and all three of them have popcorn afterwards, and you know, you're just like, you feel like this is the final test for Sammy. Like, you know, gets KO. Like, if you can win this, then maybe we can accept him.
Yes, the stringing along of Sammy. And again, I go back to it, Nick. Is it intentional and orchestrated as a mind F, or is it a genuine ebb and flow of Roman's emotions in the moment? Is he a sociopath? Is he petulant? Is he immature? Is he erratic? Or is this a game to him? And he's the smartest guy in the room, always in control of his emotions, even when it appears he's not.
Yes, I think he is in control of every emotion. He was in control of his freakout moment today. I think he was in control of the apology. I think the character of Roman Reigns is incredibly manipulative. It is Michael Corleone. It is, which even when Michael in the Godfather movies, for those of you who have not seen that, would express any form of regret or any form of sympathy, it was always, you know, a means to an end, which usually didn't end well for whoever was in his path. You know, there is a consistency of this Roman Reigns character too. It's not totally dissimilar in how he's approaching Sami Zayn than how he approached Jey Uso in the earliest iteration of the character. You know, it is that emotional manipulation that he leans into, and he attaches it and adapts it, I should say, to whatever the personality he has in front of him. So, you know, this is he's still in control, and this is part of his larger manipulative plan.
Chris, back to you.
Yeah, only thing we got now is, like, I never expected to hear whoop that trick as a chant, but, like, you know, kudos to Memphis for this. Who was it? Like, Charlotte actually was very affable in her, like, speech and whatnot, and not as robotic in her, like, promo. So I really liked that about her, and she was, like, very aware of what was going on. So it may be hope for her, but I still see them towing the line with her. You can hate me, you can love me, but, you know, we're trying to see where she toes on that line.
Nick, I'm eager to hear your thoughts on Charlotte. Remind people, how do you feel about Charlotte?
Well, I love Charlotte Flair. You know this. I think she's the greatest female wrestler that ever existed and maybe wrestler right now, period. Let me say this about I was immediately drawn to the fact that she wasn't speaking in the cadence that opened her up for the what chant. And it wasn't like, you know, sometimes when you can hear the wrestlers speak in such a pace that it feels like they're moving so fast so that they cannot get to the what chant. So it wasn't like that. It felt more conversational. It felt more natural. Now, I still think that this version of Charlotte Flair, which is like the mostly babyface champion character, lasts for about 3 weeks if that, before the audience kind of begins turning on her, and her natural heel inclinations just come out. So I always think she's stronger in the heel capacity. But she is being seen as the savior of what was one of the lowest moments in women's wrestling, in especially SmackDown, in ages. So I think that goodwill will carry her for a bit. The challenge that she faces will be the same thing that Ronda Rousey faced, in that the opponents for her are just, quite frankly, not lined up on SmackDown that really carry in a meaningful way. And it builds resentment on who is the face of that. And in that case, it was Ronda before, although Ronda clearly had other performance issues. But Charlotte, too, you know, this is a same recurring issue that she has faced. So heading into WrestleMania, I'm very curious about what they do with the women's divisions. I'm very curious, Wade. I was reading the Torch cover where you outlined different options for WrestleMania, and I think one of the things you threw out there was, do they do Flair versus Lynch? And I actually think that, you know, that's honestly the best option heading into WrestleMania. And quite frankly, closing out one of the nights, I mean, really going all in and making Lynch Flair the women's division version of Hart Michaels from the 90s. I still think that there's real money there and real could get real enthusiasm. It's probably the biggest ticket female match they have.
I thought Charlotte was better tonight than she has been. As Chris, you put it, less robotic. I thought they worked really hard, Nick, to frame her as someone you should like because she is aware of and understanding of people having a different reaction to her in the past. And then kind of jujitsu or judoing that into taking the animosity towards her and having her accept it, absorb the negativity, keep smiling, and say, but I just have a passion for what I do. You had Cole on support saying, I talked to Charlotte earlier, and this is the longest she's been away since she started in WWE over 10 years ago, and she missed the fans. And it got a little heavy, a little syrupy. I think for me and for some people, like, it felt like, okay, we get it. We're supposed to like her, and she's likable. But I understand they feel the need because of how poorly at times she's been framed. And some of her robotic performances on the microphone and some of the turns that were not turns and that kind of thing, where people didn't really know where she stood. And I think Paula Beck feels she needs a clearly defined constitution to who she is so fans have something to believe in when it comes to her. And I think this was a step in the right direction. I thought with her driving up in the BMW convertible, I thought, oh, she's going to come out and go, ha-ha, I took out Ronda Rousey and you people cheered me, but I'm not your friend, and go heel, and she didn't. There's a headwind to getting her consistently cheered, but this presentation of her, Nick, seemed to be cognizant of that and taken into account. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't that high on it. First of all, I didn't love the, she came out in the robe that looked like Rita Repulsa from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I mean, just the villain from there with like the weird neck thing. I did not like that. But I also think that, you know, the humility, which I think is what you were, you know, reacting to of her speech and how she was approaching it. She even did like the jolly, you know, like rolled shoulders
gracious
forward. Yeah, I'll say jolly, you say gracious. I think like it was just, it's not sustainable for her. I don't think that is who she is, and I don't think that's how she wrestles. I think she is a more confident performer, and I think that eventually we've been through this cycle before where we try to kind of start with a similar vein, and it always ends the same way, and it ends with people connecting to her for what she is, which is the great championship wrestler. I don't think that they've ever gone all in with her as a babyface and really emphasized that, you know, the great champion of it all. It's been, you know, a goofy baby face amongst, you know, other challengers, but really having her be the almost like the Hulk Hogan of the women's division, there's a way of approaching it that they have not yet done that could make her feel like the biggest star and all that without the element of, oh, is she holding other people down or is she taking other people's spots? You know, I don't know, Wade. I think that what I want for Charlotte Flair is to be in a very meaningful, high-profile program. And when she's not is kind of when I feel like the turning comes on her because it just feels like rudderless, the ship of the women's division. And I think she becomes the face of that. And I stand by that. I think if you accelerate a really high-profile program for her heading into WrestleMania. That's really what she needs now more than anything.
All right. I'll throw back to Chris. Anything more on that or anything else otherwise?
Only thing I got is, guys, buckle up. It's going to be a very interesting weeks and months. Let's pray for the best, and let's keep it there.
Chris, we are strapped in. Wade, you heard it here first. I am committing to coming back as much as possible for this because this is like, this is fascinating stuff that I have to talk to you about as it comes out.
All right, Chris, thanks. Good hearing from you. Have a good weekend.
You too, sir.
Yes. All right. Our number, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push one on your keypad and join the conversation. Also, the email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Up next is Jay from Michigan. Jay, good to see you. Show up tonight. What do you think of SmackDown? What's on your mind?
Hello, fellas, and Happy New Year to you. My SmackDown thoughts are, I just tuned into the show, man, so I'm talking about, the post-show, so I don't know exactly what's been discussed and what's not, with the exception of the last little bit I heard, which I do want to talk about. But my thoughts on the show, I kind of want to start with the Charlotte Flair stuff. To me, and I agree, who's your co-host tonight, Wade?
Nick Barbati.
Nick, my man, Nick, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
So what I will say is that I totally agree with your assessment of Charlotte Flair, man, and I don't see a very long shelf life with her babyface character. I think as you said, they've never really went all in on her being a face, but they've constantly tried to make her a face. But I think this was more of a necessity because of how poorly things were going with Ronda, and she's receiving, some goodwill from that. But Charlotte as a babyface is just not her character. It just doesn't work, you know what I mean? She's just a dominant heel type performer. And I think that the way that we're going, which makes the most sense, is that we should get Becky Lynch because I think that, like you said, we're like 3 weeks of Charlotte kind of receiving some positive feedback, and then it'll start to fade. But I think we will and should get Becky Lynch against Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. We've never gotten a one-on-one match with them. They are the stars and the pillars of this division, but I think the beauty of it is that I believe what we should get is that I do think Rhea Ripley should win the Royal Rumble, and she can start off by teasing, who will she face, because they love to do that. So I think that she'll tease, since she's got the history with both Belair and Flair, that she's going to pick between the two of them. She ultimately picks Bianca Belair, which is like the present and future of the women's division. But then you get, Becky Lynch stepping up to Charlotte, because Becky doesn't really need to win a Royal Rumble in order to be a match with Charlotte. And the Ronda-Becky thing just seems dead, and it's a shame that they never capitalized on that like they should have. But, with all the heat and animosity that exists between Charlotte Flair, to me, over the title, that's a night one WrestleMania-style main event. So, what do you guys think of that? And just I guess you guys did kind of just talk about that, so I don't really know if you want to expound on anything
I
said. No. Yeah.
Go ahead, Nick. Anything you want to add?
Jay, I think that you have it spot on. Everything that I think should happen will possibly happen. I think it kind of dovetails nicely to some of the coverage Wade has put out there. I do think that there's priorities heading into this WrestleMania season. I think Rhea Ripley should be and will be a priority. I definitely think, especially recently, there's a magic about her that feels very important and very special. And I do think that, this feels like an opportunity to strike while the iron is hot, with the opportunity of her versus Bianca Belair. Seems like a very worthy match that people would want to see. I think that there for me, I imagine that there was a temptation to do Belair versus Flair. I feel like that had been hinted at. But I do think that, as you said, the present and future feel like this kind of would be a good moment for that. And I still think, as I said earlier and outlined, Flair versus Lynch is the marquee one-on-one match. Yes, we can, you know, lick our wounds all we want about never getting Lynch versus Rousey. But I think that an even sadder state would be to not have a WrestleMania main event between Lynch and Flair, especially that they are the two faces of this thing for so many years now. So my hope is that we go in that direction. And then just to wrap up my comments about Charlotte Flair, one of the things that I think the embracement of her this week and last week is that, quite frankly, when you see Charlotte Flair with the championship, namely the SmackDown championship, it feels like home. Like it, the belt feels like when you see her come down the aisle, like it's like, okay, suddenly everything feels back to normal. This is, I'm used to this. This is the standard bearer of the division and, you know, is representative of better days. And I think that is the goodwill that we're really seeing on, apart from just a good performance by her tonight, sure. It's the reset to normalcy that I think people are reacting to.
Cool. Jay, anything else you want to add to this? I know you kind of did join us after we had said quite a bit about it, but go ahead with that or anything else.
Yeah, so one thing about Charlotte is that I feel like the hate, you know, I'm not like a huge Charlotte fan, but I think she is definitely one of the greatest women performers ever. You know, I don't necessarily feel like she always elevates, you know, her opponents the way that I feel Becky does. But what I will say about Charlotte that, you know, one thing, I don't feel like many, she's obviously been champion 14 times, and I can't think of very many reigns with the exception of maybe like that first reign that she had in 2016, the Raw title when she was like just a, not monster, but like just an incredible heel. Like she got booed at the Hall of Fame. I think that's like the best Charlotte title run, but I don't think that she's really had like signature title runs, which is a problem. But I also will say that, you know, I feel like a lot of times Charlotte's matches are great and then she wins the title and then people are into it and then they're like, you know, the new 14-time women's champion. And then when people hear like, oh my gosh, she's won the title that many times, it's like they automatically just turn off because all of these other things trigger in their mind about, oh, she's still in spots and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if you just appreciate and enjoy the performer that she is, you'd celebrate the title win until you hear that that's how many times she's won. So I feel like that's like a thing that I think gets in the way when it comes to Charlotte Flair. What do you guys think about that theory?
Nick, I'll let you comment on that.
I think you're spot on. I think the not having a really memorable Hallmark title reign, I think is super damaging, and I think that I think you couldn't have articulated that any better. And I think I don't know that the 14-time championship reign matters that much. I think when you hear that, the initial reaction for anybody is, well, she's going to be the one that takes her father's record. Like that's kind of to me where my brain immediately goes every time. And maybe that's because I'm a Charlotte fan. I actually would challenge you a bit, though, in one of your pieces of assessment of Charlotte, in that I do think that she has really strengthened a lot of her opponents in ways. I think she strengthens them in the ring. I don't know that from a promo ability and the build to matches. I don't think that she's the one to almost elevate people in that kind of capacity. But I think to some of her really great matches with Rhea Ripley early in Rhea's main roster debut time period, that I think Charlotte really helped, you know, carry those. And I do think Charlotte carries the load of quality. And I think that that's important. You know, those have heard me in the past. I actually would disagree in some of the Becky Lynch's building of others. I think now this run, she's been vastly improved, namely with Bianca Belair. But, you know, with any of these individuals, how the women's division has been written is kill or be killed, because there were so few spots. You were either in the world championship spot or you were nowhere at all. And thus, I think that the fight for the top almost became too visceral in a real way. And honestly, I think it's probably reflected in what you hear is some of the dynamics of some of these individuals backstage, but also translated into things getting a little too heated on social media and in some of their promos. So I think that a lot of them were trying to not necessarily build up around them. And I think those days maybe have changed quite a bit.
All right, Jay, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
Well, I think that, Nick, man, I hope I don't come off too, you know, inflammatory with these remarks, but women will be women. So the idea that they're gonna kind of have these issues is just seems to be par for the course. However, what I will say is that I think that I agree that if you have the athleticism and you're that type of worker, then Charlotte will bring the best out of you in the ring, because she takes that as a personal challenge. Like this person is, you know, potentially on par with me athletically. But I think that from a storytelling promo and getting to the ring perspective, I think Becky Lynch, like, far exceeds what Charlotte does. But I'm really ready for, like, a marquee best-on-best program between Becky and Charlotte, because I don't think we've ever got that. I take that back. We did get that when Becky first kind of started her rise as the main character, but I don't think they intended for her to be what she became. But since she's been that, I'm looking forward to, like, just having that moment, man. So that's really all I wanted to add, man. I know I didn't get too deep into the SmackDown coverage, but I was kind of fascinated by you guys' discussion with Charlotte. So thanks for having me. I won't take up more time, man. Y'all have a good night.
Thanks, Jay. Yep, you take care. Have a good weekend. All right, let's go next to we'll go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle. How's your week going?
It's good. I want to talk about this whole the Charlotte winning the title from last week and coming back from all the stuff that they talked about from last week. I feel like I'm kind of indifferent to it. I can really, I'm like kind of okay with it in some weird way. Not a Charlotte fan, but I could care less about Ronda. So the fact that she took the title from her, I'm okay with it, I guess. But I guess the problem is that replacing Ronda with Charlotte, kind of in the same situation where the women's division isn't all that deep and not all that interesting, and that's still a problem. And so, I mean, if it ends up being Becky Lynch to win the Elimination Chamber and how that's going to work, she'd go straight to SmackDown. It's going to be if it's around how that's going to work. It's just, I kind of said this before, that Becky kind of needs to get away from Raw if they want to continue having Bianca as a babyface, because as far as I'm concerned, as of right now, Becky's number one and Bianca's number two as top babyface one in that women's division. So they want to remove that theory in people's brains, then Becky has to go to SmackDown in that respect. But if I'm in Charlotte, though, being a champion, I'm like, okay, well, I heard this from a lot of people that Charlotte's not a natural baby face. She's just going to get – maybe people dislike her now because of her not being off for a while, and then whatever she – whatever the next time – the couple weeks later, she'll be back to be, like, the heel thing she was before, which is fine. But I guess my question is then is that, because we just heard from Liv, she's going to be in the Royal Rumble match. Fine. I like Liv, but, you know, her last title run sucked. So in terms of the Rumble itself, how do you think that's going to, I know it's kind of a little bit early at this point, but how do you think it's going to transpire to of each, for at least on the SmackDown side, if we all assume that Rhea's going to win the Rumble, what's going to be the thing for Charlotte headed into the Rumble, who she's going to face at the Rumble if she's going to have a match there at all?
Yep, I think I understood that. And Nick, I don't think it's too soon to be talking about the Rumble and how things play out. Who do you think wins? And then for the other title and the other brand, how do they get to where you think they're going to go?
Okay, so that's not actually what I heard Kyle's question to be, Wade. So I think what I want to make sure I get it, because I think, Kyle, you mentioned you wanted to know if Charlotte was facing someone at the Rumble. Is that correct?
Kyle, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's like this,
this part.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll talk all of it. But I just wanted to make sure I did address, you know, what
I appreciate
Kyle was
saying. I appreciate that, Nick.
So, I don't know that there is a real viable person for Charlotte to face at Royal Rumble, and I don't know that the pressure needs to be on for Charlotte to face anybody, because here's the thing: we already know that there's an inherent more difficulty given the size of the rosters to fill out the women's Royal Rumble versus the men's Royal Rumble. And thus, you can't take too many people out of that equation who are meaningful and could give the match a feeling of the potential of winning. Because if you're having someone face Charlotte at the Royal Rumble, then it probably means that there's someone who significantly should be in the match. I think we saw that in the past when Becky Lynch went up against Asuka and then went on to win the Royal Rumble later in the night. So maybe something like that. There's no one that sticks out to me on SmackDown that is really would be worthy of going up there for that match. I mean, could they do a Russia rematch with Ronda Rousey just to kind of close that chapter? Maybe. I don't know. That doesn't sound all that compelling to me, and I don't think there's been any hints of that at all either. So if you were to put anyone out there, I would just say Shayna Baszler, just because it's a natural link to where we were last week. But other than that, in terms of a Charlotte Flair opponent at Royal Rumble, no one else kind of sticks out to me. Talking about the actual Royal Rumble, wait, I agree. It's not too early to begin thinking, because you're going to blink and we're going to be there. I think there's a couple avenues, and I do still say that the most obvious winner and probably most deserving in terms of booking and everything is Rhea Ripley. I think that would feel new, it would feel fresh, it would feel big, which I think is what you want out of anybody to win that match. I mean, other options, sure, you could look at Bayley, you could maybe even look at Becky if we're talking about what are the options for WrestleMania. I would say that Rhea Ripley winning the Royal Rumble and then looking forward towards Elimination Chamber, if that's going to determine the other opponent, and I think in this case it would be against Charlotte Flair heading into WrestleMania, I think you're looking at Becky and Bayley. We've been talking a lot about Becky tonight, but I do think if Charlotte is going to be the character that she's playing tonight, a natural heel for that would be Bayley. And they've had great chemistry and great matches in the past. No marquee, I don't think, uber memorable matches. They had one match, I think, at the Royal Rumble back in 17 that was a one-on-one match. But to me, that would feel WrestleMania worthy. I don't know where that leaves Becky then for WrestleMania, but I think those are your options.
All right, great. Great answer there. Appreciate the call. I want to keep rolling here, and we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Mass. Next, we also have, by the way, Javier coming up. Nick, you get to hear the jingle. Ryan, go ahead with your thoughts on SmackDown tonight.
I have a question on Sami Zayn. How far do you think that match Freeman could possibly get first time he breaks away from the bloodline, whatever that is? Could be like a SummerSlam main event, or it could even get as far as a WrestleMania event for next year, or do you think that's too high on the two marquee for him?
Yeah. Speak to that, Nick. I talk about that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the sky is the limit on the character, depending on how it's built. I don't think right now it's at a level of being ready for a main event at WrestleMania. I really don't. I think it could have been a Rumble main event. It could be a SummerSlam main event, certainly. You know, I think these are all real possibilities. I don't think timeline's going to align with it being a WrestleMania main event, but I do think that this is going to be a bit of a slower burn, that, you know, there are moments, there are real milestones that are coming up that I think are of importance, namely the Montreal match, namely, you know, the Royal Rumble is still out there. I think there are possibilities for Sami Zayn along this way that, yes, suddenly things could come sooner than we could anticipate. I think it's all in how he's written, though, that will really set the tone for how high up that this can go. And I think the good news for the Sami Zayn character is everything around Roman Reigns just feels so important that it doesn't really need much work in terms of elevation of his opponents to make the match still feel main event worthy, no matter who the opponent is. And we already know that there's such warmth and affection from the audience towards Sammy. And I think in general, they could quite honestly unleash that at any point.
Okay, Ryan, back to you.
Second question is on Scarlett and Karrion Kross. Do you think Scarlett has more potential to win the women's title than Karrion winning the men's title?
Probably because the roster is less deep. But, boy, I'm almost rescinding my probably because if they split the titles, Nick, Kross does kind of fit the mold of somebody that I think Paul Levesque, asterisk, Vincent Mann might be the decision maker, might use for maybe a transitional run. I think Kross has been better lately. I thought Scarlett looked pretty good for, you know, the 12 to 30 seconds she got to show what she can do tonight. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think either one of them should get the 8x10s ready for photos with a championship. So I don't know. I don't think that's going to be happening. Let me just say, actually, I'm so glad you brought them up for tonight, because I had a note on my little notebook here that I was so disappointed that they rushed the mixed tag match tonight. You know, because Scarlett to me would have been a great throwback to when Sable was first introduced as a wrestler, or back when Sherry Martel and the like were more managers than they were wrestlers. So that when they wrestled in mixed tag matches, it was special. And it bothers me so much that how that segment was structured, where they were just thrown out there like, you know, oh, Scarlett's wrestling today. And then the opponents of it was Emma and Madcap didn't even get an entrance. We were joined mid-match. There was no – the announcers weren't there making it any kind of big deal. It just seemed like a real wasted opportunity, and I was uber disappointed in that moment. So I always have said I think Scarlett looks like the bigger star. I think physical charisma is a big part of any of the acts, and tied to that, Karrion Kross's new tattoos aren't it. So I'm sorry. I think, you know, whatever they're going for with him, it just seems everything seems to miss a mark by a point or two. You know, the whole thing, you know, he came back, he looked like Edge. That wasn't supposed to be what we were supposed to think when we saw him. The move set doesn't really connect. Everything just feels a beat off with him. And I don't know. Wait, I agree with you, though. He does fit the bill of someone who would be a good champion size-wise, looks-wise, overall style-wise, but it's just not there.
All right, Ryan, back to you.
Well, I will say I preferred the match from a few weeks ago at a house show. I saw the same exact match because Scarlett got to do a lot more. She even did the baseball slide kick. That was, I guess, like guarded by the refs. That it looked really cool getting between his legs, which I don't even know if that was supposed to happen or not. But another question I have for you is on Lacey Evans. What do you think would happen, or do you think this would be good for her career, like how JBL is managing Baron Corbin, that if Sergeant Slaughter was her manager?
I don't know what they're doing with Lacey, honestly. Do you think Sarge would enhance things, Nick?
Yeah, actually, that doesn't entirely – I don't – well, it depends what she's going as. I mean, if she's supposed to be a baby face, I don't know that kind of really helps. I mean, as a heel or whatever, where, like, he's kind of like a kind old man kind of rooting her on, and then she turns on him. Not too dissimilar than I think some of the early Charlotte Ric Flair kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know. The thing that he would at least do is give some form of meaning to her, some form of conviction or just a storyline for her. But at this point, I think Lacey Evans is a lost cause. I think when we look at some of the wrestlers who really benefited over the years from being directionless, then leaving the company, going and finding their voice elsewhere and coming back, that's the type of situation that screams to me that maybe she should consider.
Is that, if Vince McMahon gets creative power, do you think she's headlining WrestleMania?
Wait, you're going to give me a stroke if you keep talking like this. Like, the fact that you keep slipping this in asterisk Vince, like, I'm telling you, my left eye is twitching. Like, please stop.
All right, Ryan, what else for us?
Final question I have for you is on the USA is, do you think one day they'll be recognized by the Internet as one of the greatest tag teams of all time, say, getting into a Hall of Fame where the experts vote on, not like an WWE Hall of Fame, or you think that's too far of a long shot of happening?
I think so. I think they've earned it. I mean, we can pick apart their schedule, their house show schedule, their title defense, quality of opposition, compare it to other eras, compare it to different styles, compare it to who's fought in Reseda versus the Tokyo Dome versus the ECW Arena versus the Rec Center. Versus the Omni and Reunion Arena, all the places great tag teams have wrestled, the St. Paul Civic Center for that matter. For their era, Nick, they are top tier. They're a top tier of what
already,
they do.
They're already there. They're already there. And I think that this reign is really what has pushed it way over the edge. I think that even when you look at the modern era, other teams would have been seen in the past as maybe being the pinnacle, as the representatives of this generation, namely the New Day, say. But that has been erased. I mean, it is the Usos. They are the team. They've had tremendous matches over the years, high-profile matches. And I think especially this bloodline storyline has elevated them. You know, I have to say, and I'm not – please don't take this as a dig. You know, I didn't live through the glory days of – the Four Horsemen, which I think you, when you were young, very young, saw. But, you know, I'm sure that when people would say to me that, you know, Tully and Arn were such a vital part of that storyline, that's how I imagine the Usos were in comparison point. And I think that they seem main event to me because they're main event. And that's something you haven't been able to say about a tag team in this generation in a very long time. I don't know about those other guys on that other show.
They, I think the Usos have pulled off in the last couple of years, elevating themselves beyond the guys with colorful colors hitting, you know, as high spot relief for Vince McMahon's sports entertainment show. I mean, like they're well beyond that when it comes to their acting and their action. I mean, what Jay and Jimmy have done the past couple of years, especially, you know, Jimmy entering the picture lately. And the way they play off of everybody in the bloodline, I mean, Arn Anderson's promos were great. And I'm a real fan of Tully Blanchard's promos, but in terms of the acting, the character development, the nuance, Jimmy and Jay are in a different way, are different than Arn and Tully, because the air is different. What's being asked of them is different, but they're better. As characters right now. And it's, no one would have come close to saying that 3-4 years ago. Like,
well, wait,
this has been.
Go ahead.
It just has been such a good stretch for them. They've gotten to it's kind of like Edge and Christian. Never talked. We didn't know anything about them. And then when they finally started talking and not just wrestling, it's like, whoa, there's a lot that they can do here. And you know, to a lesser degree, that was the Hardys. To a lesser degree, but more so with the Dudleys. There were times where tag teams didn't get personalities. They just got sent out there to have good matches in the middle of the card. The Usos were that, and now they're much more than that. And their match quality is really good, and their quality of opposition is good. Ryan, my answer to your question is yes. I think the Internet will acknowledge it. It depends on what pocket of the Internet you choose to follow and pay attention to and listen. And I think the experts will honor them, too, for their contributions. So anyway, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, no, I was going to say what has really also helped them is the past couple of years, them being able to be, you know, you can tell them apart now. Because at some point, I do think earlier in the career, the announcers would be able to tell you who they were, but at watching it, you know, they looked so similar. Their styling was so similar. That break that we had when Jimmy was out with his knee injury during the Thunderdome era really gave us an opportunity to first develop Jay, and then when Jimmy came back, be able to say, like, oh, physically I can tell these two apart now, and also tell apart their personalities. And that created a layer of personality to the act that hadn't been there. And I think that's good. That's nothing but great in terms of helping to establish them further.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, anything you want to close with?
The only thing I have to say is I think Tully and Warren, they still haven't gotten in, and even the signers haven't gotten in. But all of them are close, but just sort of curious, like 5-10 years down the road, if the Usos will have any better luck than those tag teams.
And you're talking as far as WWE goes, the Hall of Fame?
Any federation, like there's a lot of, not the WWE Hall of Fame, but there's a better Hall of Fame where the experts vote on the wrestlers and not Vince McMahon or Triple H.
Yeah. I think in the WWE Hall of Fame, the Usos are 100,000% shoo-ins. A lot of times it's just politics plays into who does and doesn't get in. Anyway, let's keep rolling here. I want to get to Javier in a second. I will sneak in a couple emails before go to him. Josh in Florida said, I really enjoyed the Bloodline story throughout SmackDown tonight, especially Roman with his own popcorn, LOL. What do you think of the idea of Roman and Sammy taking the belts off the Usos? Keep up the good work. So, Nick, this is interesting because you said, oh, you think Jay's going to be the one to break away. If Jay and Jimmy break away, could Roman and Sammy develop a bond in a friendship and they stay together as heels and the Usos break away as baby faces and it's Roman and Sammy who beat them? And if that happens, where does Solo fit in, or do you not even want to go that far down the road?
I think that's compelling. It's a compelling possibility. You know what, Wade? I'm going to continue where I was going. You can't have the fissures that were created by Jey Uso that you don't call back to, and that will resolve itself one way or another on our screens. And I don't think it's going to necessarily be in favor of the Usos being aligned with Roman Reigns in the long term. I'm sticking to it. Call me crazy at the end of the day, but I think there would be interest in finding out which side is Solo on. Now, do I think Solo could handle deep acting with that? Probably not. Not to the level of his brothers or his cousin. But I think that, even having him be more aligned with Roman and Sammy over the Usos, that's more interesting to me. And I think that's interesting together to keep a bloodline faction, which requires, I think, more than two people. I kind of like the sound of that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I noticed Brad in Florida called up. I'll go to him, and then Javier is up next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Wade, I'm so happy Nick's on. First of all, I just finished watching, so please forgive me if I'm saying something that was already said. I'm sure it was, but to me, and I love Roman so much, but this was obviously by design the weakest I think he's looked, like, in terms of his character kind of breaking down. And I don't know if you guys touched upon it. If you did, again, please forgive me. But, like, what I observe is, even with eating the popcorn, and that's not something that a focused winner is doing, eating popcorn and while this match that you would be so pissed if your brothers lose – that you're going to be sitting there, chomping away on the popcorn like it's just a sheer spectator. Even in the ring, like how wordy his promo was and how, it just came across as like much more wordy than he normally is and much like kind of flustered in a sense. And I'm sure you guys touched upon that, but if you did, again, I apologize, but I do want to hear what you have to say about that, if that wasn't something that you went into great detail on so far. And I will obviously listen back to this. But I'm just curious on your
sure,
thoughts
yeah.
on that.
Yeah, well I guess I'll throw to Nick for his comment on any of that. But was the popcorn too frivolous? Was it going for laughs or cuteness? Or did it serve a storyline purpose to show that Roman let his guard down and it was a bonding moment? Or he's, as I say, playing mind games with Sammy. I won't share your popcorn. I don't want your germs, but I will have popcorn with a commenter like you. Like, what was that play there? And ultimately, do you like the call? And what do you think of Brad's framing of it?
Yeah, I think it was a direct moment of the manipulation that Roman Reigns is trying to continue to put forth by showing some level of connection to Sami Zayn and having that, like almost like that bonding moment as you've outlined, Wade. That was the intention of the popcorn, which, as we know, these things, nothing doesn't matter when it comes to Roman Reigns. Everything matters. And so that's what I feel like that moment was. When we talk about the opening segment, which we really didn't get into, I did think there was a flaw in that. I didn't love how quickly we got to Kevin Owens suddenly getting the championship match at the Royal Rumble. But I even think that, you know, in Kevin Owens, in Roman Reigns continuing to almost like welcome Kevin Owens into his world, it's tied to the real relationship being Roman constantly, you know, putting his questions of Sami Zayn to the forefront. And I think that the questions of Sami Zayn, Brad, is that it's not really about Sami Zayn. The test of Sami Zayn is really a larger test of everyone around him. How do they react when he pushes Sami in a direction, when he questions Sami, when he has, you know, concerns? I think there's a constant evaluation, a constant paranoia of Roman Reigns around him to check loyalty. But I also think one thing that doesn't make sense is of everybody around him, Sami hasn't really given him a reason to question his loyalty, which is why I think Roman uses him as like the pawn or the decoy. I think that the storyline will unveil itself that he's really testing the others around him all along. And I again have said that, yes, I am starting to believe that maybe I'm thinking too much into it. Maybe we are headed to Roman versus Sami, but you know, my hope is that that's not what happens. My hope is that at the end of the day, there's a moment where Roman flat out says, he's the only one who's never let me down. And I think that would be a nice continuation of the story.
All right. Brad, anything you want to follow up on before we move on to Javier here? All right, maybe not. So on that note, we will move to...
I got to go. I can't with this.
Javier.
I'm like, I want to just go home. Who wrote that song? Who sang that song? Who produced that song? I have so many questions. Like, this is just my hell.
Javier, welcome, PW Torch contributor. What's on your mind, Javier? We have not talked since all the McMahon news broke.
Yeah, and don't have much to say about SmackDown. I didn't actually watch it. I mainly called it. I thought Nick was on, and he had to. I knew we really wanted to hear the song beginning of the year. So,
that's funny.
And also one other thing. Second or third tier? Seriously, what the hell, bro?
You're first tier all the way, man.
Okay, you didn't mention off that. I mean, you know, been a busy week too.
You've been great. I don't know why. I don't know why you think that you were in some tier with, you know, others who shall not be named.
Am I missing something? What is your business?
Something might have come up on the fix about and you know, the top tier people and second and third tier people.
Javier, was I mentioned in this thing?
I don't remember.
Oh, I have to go back and listen.
I think if you listen carefully, you'll hear that I said Nick and Javier are two top tier guests who are sometimes on the post pay-per-view roundtables, and that they set the standard for everybody else. I think that might be
No. Javier, we know darn well when I'm on the post show pay-per-views, it literally comes with a note. Hey, Nick, so-and-so can't make it. This person can't make it. This person can't make it. Do you mind coming in? With, like, almost like an also, like, an epilogue that says, don't get used to it. You won't get asked back. Yeah. And Todd loves it when a new puppy comes into the room. Obviously.
Oh, yes.
How did you think I started co-hosting with Wade?
There you go.
I was the holiday guy. I was, you know, it was like whenever it was a holiday, it's like I know Javier's sitting home alone, you know, sad. Let me just, you know. But yeah,
that did not enter my mind until you made it your thing. So you made it your thing.
the I did catch the Sami Zayn when they were in the back. I know that it was spread out throughout the show. I did catch that. And the whole, I just love, I mean, I don't have the context of what happened before to know exactly how we got there, but the whole thing with Roman Reigns apologizing when, you know, when it's this guy, you know, when it's Sami Zayn, you know, you'll say, oh, I'm sorry. He goes, oh, I'm the one that's apologized. It feels like, I think it's because he doesn't, my take on it is that since Roman didn't see Sami as a threat and sees that he's at least, you know, going through the proper loyalty, you know, stuff, that he lowers his guard around him. Like, you know, the king, like I've seen this in like movies where like, there's like a strong king and there's like this, like the court jester is the only one he can confide in. Because he can't confide in anybody else because they think he thinks they're going to stab him in the back. So I think that's the relationship between them. So, which is like I mean,
or that's what's developing between them.
Yeah, and it's like the most dangerous place to be because you know at some point Sammy's got to go. So, but until now he's like his confidant, you know, someone he can lower, you know, let his hair down around, you know, that you know. Wax poetically about, you know, how hard it is to be the king. So I'm digging the whole thing. And then, and as always, Heyman in the background and his reactions is just what sells like every single moment they're on screen. And this was literally just like,
I think so many people miss it because they're focused on Reigns and Sammy and they miss what Heyman's doing. And I end up rewinding. And sometimes I watch each person individually when I have a chance during the shows or even after the show I've done it, where I'm like, okay, I want to see what Jay did. I want to see Jimmy did. I want to see what Heyman did. I want to watch Solo to pick up on the nuances because they're all thinking about what they should be doing and it's all different. And yeah, Heyman, especially when it was just Sammy, Roman, and Heyman, his body language and his exhales and, you know, Heyman's emotions are tied to reading Roman's emotions. If Roman is okay with something, Heyman's okay with it, but he's not okay with it until Roman is. And the cadence and the chemistry is top notch. Go ahead, Javier.
Yeah. So, and the other part I caught was the Charlotte, cause I wanted to see, what direction they're going to take with her. So, you know, because I thought they might, you know, that they're going to just play off the babyface thing for just 1 week because it's, you know, her coming back after a long period of time. People are going to cheer her anyway because she's a returning star. And then she would settle in on whatever she was going to settle in. I do agree that I do like how she owned up to the fact that sometimes, you know, they boo her. And so hopefully this is a good start. And I think someone might have mentioned this because I was listening to it. I might listen to the show on the computer. I think somebody might have mentioned something about, you know, that the problem is that she needs a good foil. She needs somebody, you know, strong to go up against. So I have no idea who that is right now because, you know, I think you could have done something with Ronda Rousey, not that she's strong per se, but I could see people, you know, just get – you know, go up against Rousey and get behind Charlotte. But, you know, some people were trying to start up a thank you, Charlotte, chant that, you know, got maybe half the audience going. But I just don't see who her opponent is going to be. Particularly on the heel side.
Nick, anything you want to say to that?
No, you know, here's what I'll say is, Javier, I don't know if you've been listening to the calls. Nearly everyone's been calling about Charlotte all night. So I think that this kind of, like, is reflective of really a peak time when we were on the call and people were calling nonstop about Sasha Banks and everything. I think I've never seen this much interest in Charlotte. And I think that's the good news of this whole thing. I think you're right, and we kind of talked about this earlier. There is no immediate person for Charlotte to go up against that makes good sense. And that's where the whole argument gets weakened. But I think in terms of the women's division right now, just using this as a focus group, if you would, this is where the energy is. The interest was in Charlotte tonight.
Go ahead, Javier.
Well, I mean, for me, it's also because the only other segment I saw was Top Dollar and Hit Row turning heel, apparently. Or is it that they Ricochet's the heel now because of what happened last. But you know, whatever the top dollar and the heel turn, which you know because I literally blinked and missed the match, which it was like 2 minutes. And at that point, I'm like, oh, this is probably gonna be a heel turn because that's you only do that and bury somebody like that right before a turn.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully this, you know, I don't think Hit Row was really working out. You know, being put in this mainly because they had them working with the Maximum Male Models and hopefully if they get an edge, I think that this should hopefully be better for them.
What do you think, Nick? You've had opinions on Hit Row.
Yeah, I think it wasn't working, and I don't think the segment today was bad. I think Top Dollar looked different to me. Something was going on there. But I think in general, you know, their beatdown of Ricochet at the end worked just fine. I think it'll be a good restarting point because things fell off very quickly from the act that I initially really, really liked. I think the star of that segment, though, is Ricochet. You know, I really do believe Ricochet is a star to watch for this upcoming year. I think he's presenting himself with a lot more confidence, both, you know, in the ring, which was always exceptional, but it's tied to just that you can see in him, like, that he feels more confident as he comes out for his entrance. And I think in previous weeks in his backstage work has improved greatly. And I think, you know, Wade, barring any asterisks that you want to add to creative on this call,
asterisk.
I think I'm leaving.
No, finish your thought. I mean, I don't know what an asterisk is, but.
I think he's doing great.
All right, go ahead off here.
Now, if you could only correct someone, a certain somebody, on their pronunciation of anticlimactic.
Is that? Who says that? Is that a Todd Morton?
It's the only thing that mars the perfect image I have of Todd Martin is the pronunciation. And oh. I mispronounced pronunciation, so that's awesome. But and yeah, the
ironic. Like your wedding day.
The the Vince McMahon thing, which has had me down, as it sounds like Nick is also. You know, so that because it has been fun.
Let me read Zach from Texas's email on Vince McMahon, and because I do want to get your thoughts, Javier, on this. Gentlemen, no offense to the wrestlers, but is SmackDown even relevant tonight? There's a madman back at WWE. I heard a lot of fancy descriptions of what transpired at Titan Tower today. Let's be straight here. Vince McMahon executed a boardroom coup on January 6th, no less, on his own company with the intention of supplanting his own daughter as chair by ousting three board members without cause and replacing them with his own sycophant cronies, Barrios and Wilson, who have so little dignity that they agreed to the scheme despite being fired 3 years ago this month. Two more members resigned in protest. This was after he threatened to hold the company hostage, all under the guise of wanting to be directly involved with media rights or potential sale negotiations. Nick Khan and Stephanie held a meeting to try to convince employees that everything's okay. But you know who wasn't involved? Talent, who have to be freaked out right now because they, like everyone else, know what with an authoritarian like Vince back, he'll never be able to restrain himself from getting involved in creative. With the two distinct factions within the C-suite and a delusional, incredibly accused sexual predator back in power, WWE feels very unstable just in time for WrestleMania season. Zach in Texas. Javier, take it away.
Well, this feels – I mean, I have the same feeling as what happened right after the post-match. The post was full gear scrum with the CM Punk stuff where things were going well and then it feels like everything kind of like, you know, everything was all of a sudden, you know just, you know, in shambles almost felt like, and this feels like the beginnings of that. I mean, I don't know if you could call it a hostile takeover when he is the owner, since he has the type of chair that basically means, you know, he's the owner.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I really thought the fix was really laid it out really well, because I'm not as plugged into the whole boardroom stuff outside of some of the stuff that I followed with with some of the mergers, like the Warner Brothers merger and stuff like that. So, but the whole thing, I'd love to see this televised. Basically, so because it almost felt from the get go when they started alienating, for me, like it started when they started alienating Stephanie and stuff, the hit pieces that were started coming out for, against
yep.
her and all that stuff, and I just don't know who's on what side, and now with Michelle the other person's name. With them, also coming back, and it's like people he's comfortable with. I don't know who's on what side of the power struggle, but it is interesting. If it stays away from creative, great. But I agree with you. I can't possibly see his fingerprints not being in WrestleMania if everything goes according to plan for him. Now. I'm expecting with the rep, I mentioned to my brother that with how rapidly he moved, I think he moved this rapidly in order to ensconce himself in preparation of more stuff coming out. Because I find it rather interesting that this stuff came out, he resigned, it died out, he started talking about coming back, the volume of it picked up on it again, and I think this is like, I'm going to get in and then ensconce myself so they can't, they're going to have to pull me out of here kicking and screaming. That's the feel I got for that. So,
or I'll,
I think
I'll burn the place down if you guys don't shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and he's in the, yeah. and he's going to put himself in a position where he can do that. And that's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah.
So, I'm expecting, yeah. I'm expecting that we're only like at the start of the boardroom stuff. And I'm expecting a lot of stuff to start coming out, rapidly now.
If people are really against Vince McMahon doing any of this, they could just shut down WWE and restart a new company with all the same wrestlers, take over the lease of an office building and just produce shows with the same crew that everybody, and just exclude Vince McMahon from anything and have his stock value go to zero. I mean, The nuclear options scenario.
The No Homers Club. You remember that episode of The Simpsons?
No, I don't.
Well, that's essentially what it was. It was a club for, a club, and then Homer showed up and ruined everything, and then they, basically, shut down the club, moved somewhere else, and they called it the No Homers Club.
Oh, wow. There you go. I gotcha.
So
yeah.
When you were saying that, that's what popped in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, the potential animosity and nuclear options that both sides have as leverage is astounding, and that's why I'm being told by people connected and in the know, brace yourselves. We're just getting started on one of the biggest dramas that you might ever see. Some people think, oh, that's overdramatic. It's not going to be like that, and they might be right. But they might not. This is the power and the money and the history and the egos and the animosity that is at play here, and the high stakes is such where you could see if Vince is like, I'll burn this place down, they might go, do it. We dare you. You know, that kind of thing. If that's the tone that struck here, it's I don't think it's fully landed with all of us, even like the where this could go. Doesn't mean it will for sure, but it could. Anyway, go ahead, Javier.
Well, I mean, and if people want to really know and get a taste for what's coming, look up Les Moonves, who was a head of a CBS corporation, and the stuff that was going on there, because there was a major power struggle around that. And that's why this from the get-go had the same kind of feel for that. I, my question is, my biggest question in the whole thing is where Stephanie laid. if Stephanie was on her father's side or against her father's side. And it's hard to really pin it down because maybe her being disappeared was, you know, a way to protect her for when Vince was forced to step down. Or maybe she was, you know, person behind it and she was, you know, moved out of the side by Vince. I don't know. That part I don't know. But it kind of feels like that's kind of where one of the possible schisms is. And, you know, what side is Nick Khan is? Nick Khan in, you know,
right.
But considering the fact that Vince came back yep. with Barrios and other person.
Michelle Wilson,
there we go. The fact that he came back with both of them tells me that these are the people that he trusts. So, it's fascinating. If this were – I found the whole CBS stuff, like, really fascinating with the CBS, Paramount, all that stuff going on. I found that super fascinating. It just sucks in the WWE because I had been enjoying the direction that things were going and seeing things getting cleaned up and things heading in a positive direction. So it's different because, like, I'm more in – you know, like, more closer to the actual – animal basically, you know, than I am, you know, when it was with the CBS stuff. So like, while, you know, it is intriguing in like the power play and the power dynamics at work, it sucks because you're probably going to end up seeing like an implosion, you know, of something that you've actually, you know, care about.
Nick, Javier brought up Stephanie being a pivotal person in this. And of course she is. I have seen Stephanie go to bat for her dad dramatically and forcefully. And, you know, she's in a different role and it's a different situation. And I understand the awkwardness of the allegations against your own dad. And if you're on his side, how it can hurt your brand to speak out with enthusiasm about him. Mm. But I am not seeing what would feel like a safe, more public endorsement of Vince McMahon from Stephanie. And I think everyone's looking for that. Everyone's, you know, okay, it's awkward to go, my dad's the greatest in the face of all these allegations. But she has stopped, and she's not burying him. She's leaving it ambiguous. But there's a way to slip something in here and there that would come across as, okay, she's on his side. She can't say so, and she needs plausible deniability. I just haven't seen that.
But you heard animosity.
Yeah, that's. I was thinking that as I said it.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, no, I mean, those are the tells. I think of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I actually feel very badly for her. As much as you can, someone you don't know that's a billionaire that, you know, is so far out of my orbit. Sure, I feel bad for her. I mean, I imagine it's a really tough situation that she's in. Yes, Wade, you can simultaneously – all these things can be true. She can simultaneously love her father, believe he's the most brilliant man in wrestling, loved learning from under his tree for, you know, two decades or more, but then also recognize she's a husband here who's doing the day-to-day creative work. She herself has ambitions of, you know, and is finding success in running the business. And, you know, they've been really rightfully puffing their chest for 6 months. And how do you then roll that back and have to answer to somebody who you don't want to answer to anymore? I think that, you know, I do think you're not going to see necessarily a statement from her one way or the other that's either damning or celebratory. But I also think you're going to start seeing things roll back that we were starting to get used to. I think you be prepared to see less of Paul Levesque being available to the media and being out front and being able to and willing to take questions if he's unhappy, especially with how things are going. You know, things are ripe for conflict, especially if the company is in negotiations to be sold. Things will suddenly not become as transparent as they were, especially under Vince's watch. You know, there will be things that change in a big way that we see in the everyday that maybe isn't reflective to the screen. But, you know, things will inevitably bleed over into the creative. You know, you have to remember one thing, no matter what your role is with the company, whether it's your representative linked to the network, whether you are the creative team member or the production team member, if you're board of directors, they all have vested interest in one thing: what takes place on the pro wrestling TV show that then translates to every other business thing that they do. So to say Vince McMahon or anybody else who's on the board of directors, especially someone as him who's has the history that he does with the company and with the roles that he's held and whatnot, that he's just going to be hands-off on the material on the show, it makes no sense. It's directly tied to the content that they're selling, the company for. So, you know, that's the reality of this situation.
Javier, back to you.
And the other thing I kind of want to bring up, because his name was brought up in conjunction with this, which was The Rock. The Rock recently, I wouldn't be surprised if I agree with from the point of view of Cena. Cena has a carefully curated personality, but The Rock recently ran afoul of Hollywood. He basically, with the whole Black Adam stuff, he went over the creative studio heads and went straight to the CEO, which is a no-no. Yeah. There's stuff going on there. Like if you follow Hollywood closely, that he basically broke a taboo, and he on the plus side, he has a lot of money and you know, he has his own production studio, but so it's not like he's like gone, but I would not be surprised if like the Hollywood love for The Rock doesn't dry up due to that, because I mean, you know, he's not a Hollywood guy. He's more of a straight shooter, and he's going to do things the way the right way. But in Hollywood, there's a game that's played, and if you don't color inside the lines, you're going to find yourself outside of the club. And there's a lot of money, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to. You know, he's going to have to find another way to keep his face out there.
Interesting. Yeah. How would Dwayne Johnson have handled this differently 6 months ago versus now in the position that he's in and with his image? And I think it can break either way, too. Either he feels he has fewer choices, or he needs to go back to a friendly place, or he's got to be even more cognizant of his image and not make any moves that are going to reflect negatively on him. Nick, any thoughts on that?
No, I don't know enough about The Rock stuff, but I'm reading up on it now as you guys are talking.
Yeah, yeah. Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
I think that's about it. I've been all over the place. I joined Taylor Sage. I'm on YouTube now. Much to my chagrin, I joined Taylor Sage and Brian and the Watch Long for Wrestle Kingdom. I was also on the round table with Sean Radigan, and I will be on with Greg Parks. So if you're not sick and tired of me already, you could come see me and Greg Parks. we'll talk about stuff. So
you didn't know it, but we all got together, all the A-teamers, and we decided this would be Javier week.
What team am I on?
You weren't in the group text?
No.
Nick, you were with you were on the one of the round tables, so you're at least B tier, so.
Well, I was on the WrestleMania round table, so that's B plus tier, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. At least.
At least, yeah. At least, yes. Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Javier. Yeah, so you'll be on with Greg this weekend, Sunday night, Wrestling Night in America.
Have a good one.
Have a good weekend.
Have a good
one, guys. All right, take care. Nick, thank you. Anything else for
Wade.
SmackDown? Want to sneak in?
No, Wade, this is always a pleasure. You know, Wade, I just want to plug myself real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah. No,
starting, I'm coming to YouTube. We are debuting a new show. It's called And Here's Why with Nick Barbati on my YouTube channel, Nicholas Barbati. So that will be coming out on Monday, my debut. We're going to be doing a weekly show heading up until WrestleMania with happenings in WWE, 20-minute Hot Topics, Wendy Williams style.
What's the key word people should enter to find this show?
I haven't gotten there yet. Wait. What do you mean the key word?
I'm trying to help you out here.
Nicholas Barbati, whatever. I don't know. Yeah,
well, when I Skype you, I just type N-I-C-K, and it's like, doesn't show up. Oh, sorry, it's Nicholas. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, N-I-C-H. So, you know,
I thought you were looking for my elevator pitch right there. I was like, wait, can we not do this after I've just gone 2.5 hours for you? Like, can we not? I've given the torch 3 hours of my Friday. That's my love for it. So come on in. We're gonna talk. It's gonna be, you know, real time, like one on one with me. I'm so excited for it. You know,
awesome.
And, you know, it's gonna be fun.
Excellent. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Appreciate your 3 hours.
Of course. No problem.
Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you.
All right. Good night.
Everybody.
Bye-bye.